Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello, this is the Game Day Preview podcast from TalkSport. For some, it may be the winter break, but not for us hardy souls. Wading through a frozen, frosty, fog-filled February with power and strength like Alain Saint-Maximin, although not sure we have that level of finish. That's taken on greater significance since. This week, a truncated fixture programme, but a chance to look more in depth at Manchester City's meltdown. Well, it's got to be a meltdown, hasn't it? Because it's 2020 and they've lost two games in a row, so that's definitely a meltdown. Crikey, if that's a meltdown, imagine what West Ham's scenario is. They're in real trouble. But then again, we knew that anyway, didn't we? But who's really to blame? We speak to Aaron Ramsdale, who says his teammates are all in tune. Plus, we look at whether cherries are blossoming again now that the walking wounded are hobbling back into the team. Brighton fought back from three goals down at West Ham last week, but they really do face a fight to stay in the league. And we start the weekend at Goodison Park, where Everton take on Crystal Palace. Plus, we've also got a quiz today. Keep listening.
This is Game Day, Premier League Preview Show.
And in the pod this week, Alex Crook is back. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Looking forward to the quiz.
Yes, you love a quiz, don't you?
I like it.
Now, remember, we are trying to create good radio stroke audio material here. So this is not just about you winning, because you do get very competitive.
It's all about winning.
Absolutely.
It gets very sweaty, very fiery and very loud during a quiz, don't you?
So you can look forward to that.
Yeah. Danny Gabaldon is here too, a delicious looking fellow.
Thank you.
You'd have got chatted up at this funeral I went to yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, lovely lady in her 70s, very regal, very graceful, started chatting away to me over the sandwiches and she said to me, oh, you're very handsome. Clearly eyesight fading. But she was really sweet. She was really sweet. I liked it. We had a long chat, loves football, big Tottenham fan. And as I was about to leave, she said to me, I must say, I think you're delightful. Of course, I was blushing at this time. She said, I thought as soon as I saw you, he must have been a male model. And then the punchline, in his youth.
Just killed you at the end.
She gave with one hand and then ripped it away. Cheers.
I used to play for West Ham, so she wouldn't fancy me. So, she's a Tottenham fan.
Let's get on to the big game.
Fernandinho gets a touch on it, turns it round the corner, comes back to Bernardo Silva, cleared off the line, and then hit into the goal by Gundogan, and three goals are up for Manchester City. Fredericks delivers in towards Allaire, Akrabatic, oh! It's a sensational second goal! Ball by Gundogan to find Gabriel Jesus, who curls it into the top corner, despite the hand of Jordan Pickford, he couldn't keep it out, and Manchester City, right on cue, 6 minutes into the second half, it's Gabriel Jesus.
Noble on the edge of the penalty area. Antonio! Really good goal by Mikel Antonio. And just a glimmer of hope for West Ham United.
Manchester City dominated at Tottenham last week and they still lost. They lost to Manchester United at home despite creating enough chances to win the game as well. They've dropped 24 points already this season, which is 8 more than the whole of last season. And reports are that Pep is ready to tear this team up and start again. Centre-back is an issue, obviously. Everyone said that at the beginning of the season. It's too light. They haven't got enough cover in that area. But Pep, City, Soriano, whoever it is who's in charge of recruitment, they thought they could cope. And that looks a little bit foolish now, doesn't it? as does the lack of real leaders in the group, which was vacated by Vincent Kompany. But does that go to the wider view that Pep doesn't like big characters, which is something that was said by Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Thierry Henry, or is that too simplistic?
I think they just got complacent and comfortable. I mean, if you've won the league by a point, as they did last season, against a Liverpool side who only lost one game all season, you really need to strengthen from your position of power. That's what Sir Alex Ferguson was so good at doing at Manchester United. Every couple of seasons, he would regenerate the squad, even if they just won it. We all remember that summer when he bombed out Hughes, Kanchelskis and Ince, and people thought he was mad, and obviously had the kids coming through. They didn't do enough in the summer for me. They didn't replace Kompany, as you've said. And I do think there's a certain amount of arrogance on the part of Pep Guardiola that he didn't think they needed a centre-half. He thought, oh, we can just stick Fernandinho there, we'll be OK. Actually, if you watch the Manchester City game closer, the two goals that they conceded to Spurs, both of them, he was at fault, Fernandinho. Clearly, he's a world-class player in midfield by a proper defender, and I'm sure they would have run Liverpool a lot closer. I think it's been a real... I put this on Twitter. Is this the worst defence of a title in Premier League history? People threw Blackburn at me.
What about Chelsea?
Chelsea were thrown at me as well. Leicester, of course. But I don't think any of those sides were considered in the same vein as Manchester City. The fact they've been so poor this season and so timid in giving up their title, I think there's a definite case to answer for Pep Guardiola. And if they go out the Champions League early, I think he could be in real trouble.
Well, he deserves criticism, doesn't he? And I think he sometimes get away with it because his disciples suggest that he can walk on water. Yeah. Taking Aguero off and putting on Cancelo at 1-0 down. At Wolves in the Cup, he made some odd choices from the off. In the Carabao Cup, second leg against Manchester United, I mean, I thought he played a rather arrogant formation. Mm. And I remember texting you at the time saying, I'm going to back Manchester United in the game because, in terms of with my own hard cash, because I just thought you can't play with one defender and think that you're going to get away in a derby without conceding a goal. I thought it was very strange.
Sometimes he tries to be too different. And look, it's, you know, a lot of the time it will come off and he comes up with some kind of masterstroke things tactically at times. But he does deserve criticism at times as well with some of his... decisions that he makes in big games.
Do you think he started to believe in the whole Guardiola-ism? You know, like it's some sort of
I do think
religion.
He is trying to do something different to what every other football manager is doing. It's more than just about winning with him, it seems. It's the kind of the way you win. It's about kind of leaving some kind of legacy, I think, about, you know, style of football when he eventually calls it a day as a manager. I think that's how he kind of looks at things.
And but he should be credited for that because he has pushed everybody in the direction of travel of playing better, more beautiful football.
Yeah, but I think there is an argument. I think, as Alex said there, you probably do have to freshen the team up in certain areas off the back of success. Because I think there's such an intensity to Pep as well. I think the players find it, you know, after the second, third season, it could almost kind of grate on you a little bit, if that's the right way of kind of putting it. He's so intense with everything. You know, you look at the way he's kind of, certain players are maybe being treated, John Stones at the minute, Leroy Sané doesn't want to sign a new contract. It is his way, I think, or the highway kind of thing. You know, this is what I want. I don't want you deviating away from the plan kind of thing. I do think maybe after two or three seasons of that, even if you're getting success, it can be kind of difficult for the players as well.
I don't think Sergio Aguero plays particularly with a smile on his face at the moment. Just say he was hooked off against Tottenham. I think he was going to be taken off anyway because Gabriel Jesus was prepared to come on even before the sending off of Zinchenko. So, yeah, I think Danny's got a point. I don't know if this Manchester City team are enjoying playing for Pep Guardiola. And I think that's coming across now in their results.
Both teams have scored in 7 of City's 12 home league games this season. So you'd think there was every chance, actually, that West Ham could get on the score sheet until you remembered that it was West Ham, who I said last week, and I may have appeared a little bit bold when I said they'd be relegated, but nothing I saw last Saturday, especially at the back, changed my mind in that regard. Their next few fixtures have been well discussed. They are incredibly difficult. They will be ensconced in the bottom three by the time we get to the end of March. I will guarantee that to you. Do they have enough to get out of it?
I'm worried. I really am. For that main reason, really, Samuel, you mentioned here, defensively, all season, really, they've been really
poor. I mean, the Pascal
poor.
Gross goal was the most
calamitous thing.
Was that the diving header from Ogbonna?
I mean, was it
five mistakes. Yeah. Masuaku just kicks it up in the air against one of his own defenders. And then the ball bounced twice before someone takes charge.
Yeah.
And then there's the diving header, which isn't really a diving header, with about as much strength as a cup of tea who's had a little dip from the old tea bag. Yeah. And that's it.
Or weak orange squash.
Weak orange squash. Yeah.
But that's the issue 52 there.
52 parts water, one pot. Yeah.
In a nutshell,
you know the story.
Lack of leadership Google there it. At the back. There's no leadership. You know, decision-making from defenders has been poor all season long. You know, when you're in that position where you're down the bottom, you're struggling for results, you get yourself into a position where you're 3-1 up. If that's me as a defender and you're lacking a bit of confidence because you're in a winning situation which you haven't been used to very much, you just go back to basics. It's game management. You know, if the ball drops, you stick it as high in the stand as you can. You don't take any chances.
But the nervousness is all over the place, isn't it? I mean, you're 2-0 up and then 3-1 up. But ultimately, Fabianski gets Brighton back into the game with, I don't know if it was supposed to be a punch or what it was supposed to be, a high five.
Uncharacteristic from him.
Yeah.
He doesn't usually make those sorts of mistakes, which sort of suggests that it's catching, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I suggest whether he's actually 100% fit as well. I think it's kind of knees must with him playing.
You're
at the
rushing
minute.
Someone back because you're desperate.
And even David Moyes, I think, nervousness with him. 3-1 up, they change system. They go to a five at the back. They take Suchek off, the new signing, who did okay.
Yeah.
Antonio came off, and for some reason, when he's not involved or playing, you know, West, he makes them look a totally different team. He comes off, they go to five at a back.
But he can't play 90 minutes.
The 3-1, which is the only problem at the minute.
It's not the only problem.
You've got Jared Bowen who's come in from the Championship, 16 goals already this season. Thomas Suchek, you've mentioned, has arrived too. Is it too much to ask for those two players to turn their fortunes around?
Big ask.
I'm not convinced by the Bowen signing.
Well, I like Bowen. I think he's a very good player.
My issue with Bowen is, and I was on deadline day duty for TalkSport, that deal took an age to get over the line.
Because he didn't want to go there.
I know for a fact his agent was on the phone to Newcastle on the afternoon on deadline day saying, come on, make a bid. And they thought he was overpriced. But if your agent is trying to find you a move to another club hours before you're going to sign on the dotted line, I don't think that's the type of character you need in a relegation battle. No. I think he has all the assets that West Ham need.
I think actually he is exactly the character you want in a relegation
battle. Probably doesn't want to be there, really.
Well, forget that to one side for a second. But first of all, let's focus on the fact that he is quite an excellent, energetic scrapper.
He's quick and then he
gets hold of the ball. He takes it by the scruff of the neck. I saw him in a game against Middlesbrough earlier in the season. They were 2-0 down. He decided, 10 down against 10 men, Middlesbrough, decided to grab the ball by the scruff of the neck, ended up getting a draw out of the game. He's got that about him. He's a dogged character. You're right to say that he didn't want to go there. If I was advising him, I wouldn't have sent him to West Ham either, because I don't think if you're going to make up the step to the Premier League for the first time, this is how you want to do it. I don't think it's the right move for him as a player, really. Look, they've won 3 of their last 12 Premier League away games this season, so there's not much chance of them getting anything at Manchester City.
The worst thing that could have happened was Man City losing the way they did as well last weekend.
Two league games in a row.
They're going to be angry. They're going to be angry, and West Ham are going to cop the brunt of that anger. I don't even want to think about what the score might be. I really don't.
Good luck, David. OK, let's move on to Brighton against Watford. Now, 8 points separate Leicester in third and Chelsea in fourth. 8 points separate Arsenal in 10th and Watford in 19th. How odd is that? Such is the concertina nature of the Premier League this season that the relegation six-pointers are not few and far between. This is arguably the big one of the weekend, actually, isn't it? Faltering Brighton, who show great character, fighting back from 2-0 down against woeful West Ham, against a Watford side who threw away a two-goal lead at home to Everton. Now, what's happened at Brighton? One win in 11 games.
Yeah, we touched upon this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? I'm a big fan of Graham Potter. I like him as a person. I mean, he showed tremendous bravery last week.
We had a little bit of a ding-dong about it, didn't it? Because you were saying how great they all were and they're playing nicer football. And I was saying, but points are quite important.
Yeah. At the moment, you've been proved right. But
still a long way to go.
There is a long way to go. And for me, he's made a crucial change at the weekend. Glenn Murray's back in the team. And I think, again, during that chat, I did say, if you've got Glenn Murray, a player who over the course of his Brighton career has guaranteed goals and you're struggling for goals. Mopé's lost a bit of confidence. Why would you not stick him in the team? They've stuck him in the team. They've given him a new contract this week. And I think he could make the difference between staying up and going down. It's amazing for me that they ignored him for so long.
It's almost like he's admitted that he got that wrong, I think. Coming into the club, obviously, he had his ideas, I think, about how he wanted to play. Obviously, thought Glenn Murray wouldn't really suit that. Obviously, signed Morpé, who's done okay. But no surprise, really. Comes into the team and he scores. You know what you're going to get with him, as I've played with him at Crystal Palace. And he knows where the goal is. He gets in the right place at the right time. He occupies defenders. He holds the ball at well. He's a good all-round striker.
Great lad as well, in terms of character in the dressing room.
Yeah, great character in the dressing room and, you know, has that experience that you need in these kind of situations. So
one of their big problems, though, has been conceding so many goals of late as well. Yeah. Have they sought that out?
Well, that's the other change that he needs to make because, again, if you look at their first 2 years in the Premier League, their best two players, apart from Murray, have been the centre-halves.
Duncan Duffy.
And he's ignored Duffy because...
The whole season Webster, he's ignored him.
He's more of a kick-it-away central defender than someone who can play out from the back as Potter wants. But I think you need... All hands on deck now. You need that type of character. He's not fit at the moment. My suggestion is when he is, he goes straight back into the team. And they reform that axis. And again, I think they'll give themselves a chance of staying up.
I've always been a bit sceptical about the goalkeeper. One, I think he's too short. And two, I think he makes a lot of mistakes. I know he does make saves as well, but I think he makes a lot of mistakes. You've always been quite sort of pro Matt Ryan. Is he good enough, really, for a Premier League team?
Yeah, I think at the end of last season, when they were scraping to stay up, he made some crucial saves. You might be right on the height thing, but I've levelled that at Jordan Pickford in the past. I don't think in this day and age you need to necessarily be 6'7" to be a Premier League goalkeeper. Mm. Again, I keep coming back to the word character. He's your typical bullish Australian. He's brought into the philosophy of Brighton, the city and the club since he's got there. I think it'd be foolhardy to drop him now, I really do.
We've talked about goalkeepers in the last section of this programme. We're quite sort of focused on those. And we've also got a great quiz upcoming, so stick around for that. Alex is very excited. Let's talk about Watford then, the second lowest scorers in the division. But Deeney has made a real difference to them. He brings a sort of balance to the force, doesn't he? He's the sort of glue from which everything else is bound together.
Top goal scorer already. I mean... How many games did he miss as well with injuries? Come back in, coincided with Nigel Pearson getting the job. 5 goals, top goal scorers. As you say, Sam, your goals have been an issue for them all season. I think it's just important for them to kind of refocus, really, because Pearson's done a really good job coming, kind of got instant results, and I think he's gone 3 games now, and he without a win in all comps.
That really hurt him, defeat against Everton.
It's twice in a row they've lost in stoppage time, isn't it? Yeah. They lost at Villa as well during
their
midweek round.
Defensive set pieces as well, really.
Do you think they might be levelling out a little bit here? Because they're obviously not as good as you thought they might be when he first came in and he's had the manager bounce. You know, they're just a little bit better organised. Dele Theo is a lovely footballer, but he's not consistent enough, is he? And same probably goes for Pereira. But they will press Brighton right from the very off. They did it against Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago to good effect. And that may well cause Graham Potter a few problems.
Yeah, it was good news for you. They're struggling, isn't it? In terms of keeping you out the tattoo parlour at the end of the season.
What's this?
What did you bet or
no, this is what happened. This is a private conversation, a WhatsApp group, in which...
Nothing's private when you're talking to a journalist.
Someone is discussing about Watford and how they thought that they would stay up. And I said, if they stay up, I'll get a tattoo of a hornet.
Oh, no.
So he went on the radio an hour later and broadcast this to the world. And now, every time Watford score a goal, I get about 100 tweets from Watford fans suggesting tattoo parlours that I could... frequent and
where,
give them
where, where are you going to get it?
Well, I won't need to because they're going to get relegated.
So you must be panicking slightly though at the minute. But
mate, the first few games, I was absolutely bricking it.
Looked like they were going to finish top 10.
To be fair though, it's a big game for Watford this because they've got some tough fixtures coming up. United away, Liverpool at home, Palace away and Leicester at home are their next four after this. So,
Sheffield United to come?
Yeah.
In answer to your question, though, I think it was inevitable they were going to level out and my fear for Watford always... and we've seen this in the past, that if you give yourself so much of a bad start and you have to make up ground,
it's really
you have to pick up points every week.
Yeah.
So every game is a cup final.
Yeah.
And I do...
You can't afford to have any slips, can you?
No, and I do fear that that start is going to cost them. Pearson's obviously had that new manager bounce, but in many ways, I think now we're going to really see a test of his managerial acumen when they're not getting the results.
You can't go through fixtures, and we have gone through fixtures. I mean, look at Brighton. They've got Leicester away, Sheffield United, Wolves all away from home, Liverpool, Man City and Manchester United at home still to play some tough fixtures.
They'll beat United.
And you can't say they'll win this one or that one, or you can't guarantee that that's going to be the case. But it looks to me like the points total that's going to be required to stay in the division, which has recently and historically been very low, will actually be pretty high this season. I think you might need 37, 38. The average over the last 10 years has been 35 and sometimes as low as 32.
Well, what was that year when West Ham went
42.
Down? 42. Yeah.
But that was that, you're going tilt-up. Back to the early 2000s
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 20 years ago,
yeah,
Danny.
But it's just that it's an omen. For, it's an omen for West Ham.
No, but it is.
I think it
possibly could be because you could pick up, they could still pick up another 15 points and still be relegated from the Premier League.
Yeah.
Southampton are only on 31. Obviously, they've had a fantastic run. But again, it's when they start losing games,
so
they can get
close.
Sucked back in.
It's so close in the middle part of the Premier League, and that is a real worry. I'm sure it will be a real worry for some of those teams at the bottom.
We're not allowed to call them six-pointers, by the way.
Why?
According to Dean Smith. I asked him after the game at Bournemouth, you know, the fact that this is a six-pointer and you've got more to come between now and the end of the season, will these games make the difference? And he said, well, you only get 3 points for a win. Okay, mate, yeah.
Dean,
it's the swing, isn't it? Because if you get 3 points, it means the other team have dropped 3 points. So add that together, that's 6 points. That's why it's a six-pointer. It's GCSE math.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Oh, I'm really excited about this. It's our mid-season Premier League quiz. Danny Gabaldon, former Welsh international, Cardiff, Crystal Palace and West Ham superstar, is here. Alex Crook, TalkSport South Coast reporter and commentator, is alongside us as well. Who gets very, very competitive. Very, very competitive.
I'm on my best behaviour.
And Andrew Butler, the chief of Dream Team FC, is here with all his wealth of knowledge and statistical prowess. Hello, how are you?
Hello, yeah, very well, thank you. I heard the word quiz and I thought I'll pop in for it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay, so it's pretty simple. We're not going to do this sort of like buzzer thing because Alex will end up breaking buzzers, making too much noise. He's like a bull in a china shop. So it has to be controlled in order to manage his expectations. So I'll just start going round, asking question after question. At the end of it, we'll add up who got what right. And then the winner can get themselves a T-shirt, probably off the Moose, which says Talk Sports Quizmaster or something like that. Or
you know. Not a worn one, but the Moose, I hope. Hope it's fresh.
Well, there's only one person who'd get in that. right, OK, so here's the first question. We'll go to Danny first. Who scored the first goal of the Premier League this season?
Oh, my. Pass.
Alex?
Wow, I'm trying to think what the 12:30 would have been on the first day of the season. Oh. You were there.
That's your first mistake.
Oh.
You're
no.
out.
Oh, no, it's a Friday night. Who was the... I did the game. What was the first game? It was Liverpool against Norwich. Wasn't the first goal an own goal? Grant Hantley, was it not?
Grant Hantley.
Oh, that is
a great
hang on
show.
A minute. The commentator's advantage that, no? He's at the game.
Point to Alex. Which goalkeeper has conceded the fewest goals in the Premier League so far this season?
Which goalkeeper has conceded the
Dean Henderson.
Goal?
Incorrect. Danny Gabaldon.
Is it now Alisson?
Correct. A point for you. Who recently picked up the first point against Arsenal in 10 attempts? Alex Crook.
Burnley.
Correct.
This guy's just too good.
Andrew Butler. Which on-loan goalkeeper has been in the employ of at least six clubs that have won the English League title, including Liverpool and Manchester City?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the hardest question of the quiz. rush you.
No, I'll just say Pepe Reina.
No. Danny Gabaldon. Who's played for six clubs that have won the English title?
He's got to be getting on slightly then.
Oh, he is. All right, move it on.
Yeah, go
Alex.
On.
I've got two.
we only want one answer.
I think Rob Green's retired.
Yeah.
So it's Scott Carson, is it?
Correct.
Yeah.
He has played for Liverpool,
that's good.
Manchester City, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, Villa and West Brom, all of whom have won the title at some point in their history. He's also played for Bursaspor in Turkey for a season.
I bow to your superior knowledge.
Okay, next question goes to Andrew Butler. Who is Tottenham's top Premier League goal scorer this season?
Son Heung-min.
Incorrect. Oh. Danny Gabaldon.
You think the obvious, don't you? But that's why I don't want to say it. Who else has scored goals, though?
Oh, come on.
I'll just say Harry Kane.
Correct, despite the fact that he hasn't played since January the 2nd. Name the two players that have been sent off twice this season in the Premier League.
Oh.
Alex Crook.
This might undo me here.
Ooh. Nah, you'll get this.
Zinchenko?
Nope.
You have to get both.
You can have a point for each if you want.
Son Heung-min.
Yes, that's one.
Yeah, you're right.
And
Andrew Butler, can you get me the other one? Plays for Watford.
Oh, I was thinking that.
No.
Look, he knows.
All right. Etienne Capoue.
Nope.
It's not Etienne Capoue. Who are you going to go for, Danny?
Christian Cabasele.
Correct.
Oh, nice.
Boom!
Very good.
Okay, Crook, this is an easy one. Who is the most booked player in the Premier League this season?
Jefferson Lerma.
Of Bournemouth. 66 across the past 4.5 seasons.
Wow.
Wowzers.
22 in his Bournemouth career. He's only been there 18 months.
Hang on a minute. He's the South Coast correspondent expert.
It's how the questions fall. Don't start getting competitive.
Okay.
Andrew Butler. Which current Premier League player has scored 26% of his team's all-time Premier League goals? Look at Crook's smug face.
Because he knows.
That might give you a clue.
Callum Wilson?
Nope.
Oh, no, that's thrown me now. I had Sergio Aguero from the start, and then I thought, no, I can't. I'll pass it on. Go on.
Glenn Murray.
It is Glenn Murray. 26 of the 99 goals that Brighton have scored in the Premier League have come from him. So on to Andrew again. Alexander Zinchenko was the second Ukrainian international to be sent off in the Premier League when Manchester City lost at Spurs last week. Who was the first?
Come on.
I know this as well.
Ukrainian.
Give up now.
Yeah. He's trying to bully you. Don't have it.
First Ukrainian to be sent off.
Andrei Shevchenko.
Close, ooh, but no cigar.
Is that first close because Ukrainian he's from Ukraine?
Do you want a clue?
No.
Yarmolenko.
He was an Arsenal player.
Oh,
I was going to say, Oleg Luzhny.
That is bang out of order.
I was going to say Sergei. I was going to say Rebrov. You know?
Never have got
that. I was in my head first, Rebrov.
Who is the top scorer in the Premier League for the lowest scorers in the Premier League? Andrew Butler.
Wow.
Oh, I know this.
Is it Jordan Ayew?
Yeah.
It is, correct. Well done.
Good shout.
A point. Is that your first point?
Second.
Okay. Well
I'm
done.
Coming after you, Gab.
Which team has fielded the youngest average age starting 11 in the Premier League this season?
Mm. This is big.
This is it.
Now, I have two teams in my mind.
We only want one.
I know. That's the problem. Now, I'm thinking I go with Leicester.
Nope.
I'm going to say Manchester United.
Correct.
Oh,
his own team.
Okay, and this is the final question. So,
just get it right, Andrew.
Danny's got one point less than Alex. So, Andrew,
that was big, that.
If you
big,
get this wrong, this question goes to Danny.
So, just get it right.
If you get it right, then Alex wins the quiz.
You know what to
if
do.
If you get
mate.
It right, can you know we just call do. It like 7 points to me? How about that?
Just do what Who? You've been doing for most of the quiz and not get it right.
He's got form. It's going to come to you, Danny. Who is the oldest player to play in the Premier League this season?
Oh.
That's tough.
Oh. I know who it is. I think I know
do
who
you?
It is. Yeah. I think.
Oh, come on.
Johnny Evans.
No. Johnny. Well, he's like 31 or something.
I was thinking of Gareth McCauley.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been right either.
That would have been right.
He's like retired, I think.
Exactly. He's that old, he's retired.
Oh, like something popped into my mind straight away, but I don't know if he's right.
Go okay, on. First of all, I think it is worth pointing out that Johnny Evans is 32.
You are so bad at quizzes.
Casper Smythe's older than him, isn't he?
That's well old compared to me.
Pepe Reina. Is no, it? Is it not? No.
Is it a goalkeeper? I don't think it is a goalkeeper.
It is a goalkeeper.
Oh, okay.
I thought I was so right with that one. He's going to get it now you told him he's a goalie.
Again, I've got two. Is it Willy Caballero?
It is indeed.
Yeah!
Can I just say I wrote down Willy Caballero as an option?
He's nicked it. He's nicked
I don't know
it.
For John
that was Robbins. Like last week as well.
Big Willy is the answer. 38 years of age. He came into the team last Saturday, and at the time, he then became the oldest player to play in the Premier League this season.
And I think the oldest outfielder would be Zabaleta, wouldn't it?
Probably, but I didn't do that research. Thank you very much. Great quiz, everybody.
Brilliant.
Well done,
well done
Alex.
Well done.
Andrew,
Alex.
Well done for being
here. Totally showing up, making the numbers up. That was like the title race last season, that.
If I'd lost to Oleg Luzhny, I'd have been fuming.
Two teams going in different directions at Goodison Park. Everton seem to have responded well to Carlo Ancelotti, whereas Crystal Palace look a little bit thin on the ground. And despite picking up that draw at City, they've had a few injuries and up and down form over the course of the Christmas period. Everton unbeaten in their last six at home. What would you expect the outcome to be, Danny?
I can't see Palace getting anything. The form they're kind of in at the minute, lack of goals. Everton buoyed by that comeback, obviously. But to be fair, their last home game, they drew 2-2 with Newcastle, didn't they? They come back.
They were 2-0 up going into stoppage time.
Yeah, and somehow managed to kind of not win the game. But I think they're going in the right direction under Ancelotti.
You wouldn't leave an Everton game right now before the final whistle,
would
you?
They certainly picked up attacking-wise. They're scoring more goals again, more shots on target. All those kind of stats are up under the new manager. Calvert-Lewin is a man in form. He's got 10 goals in the Premier League now, which is, I find, kind of astounding. I never thought I'd see him actually
12
do
goals
that.
All season, 7 goals in his last 12 games. Yeah. Would you like to mark him?
I wouldn't actually, no. I wouldn't be worried about him, you know, scoring a hat-trick, but you just know he's going to run the channels. He's going to like the physical side of the game. He's just going to make things difficult for you. If the ball goes in the channel, you
very
know...
good in the air
Yeah,
as well.
He's good in the air. He's quick. And you just know he's going to be at it for 90 plus minutes. So, and it used to be where obviously he was doing a lot of the work and you're thinking maybe he needs a partner alongside him then who's going to get around the box and score. But I think under Ancelotti, he's doing a bit more, well, less work, I would say, and getting into those goal scoring positions.
Talk to me about Palace. They don't mind soaking up, playing on the counter. That sort of works with Zaha and Ayew. Can Everton contain them?
They're very good at staying in games, Palace. Whenever I've seen them this season, they don't really get steamrolled by anybody. They've scored a lot of late goals. They tend to come good in the second half, which suggests their fitness levels are very good. But there's quite a few Palace fans working in the media, actually, and just meeting them in various press rooms over the course of the last couple of weeks, that there is genuine concern they're going to get sucked into danger because they didn't really... Well, they didn't do anything, did they, in the transfer window? I think
two days before
the window, Roy was saying we want minimum of 2, maybe 3 players in. Obviously, they went for Carrasco, which was a deal that was never going to happen because he was on huge money in China. Then they went for Jarrod Bowen. Obviously, he ended up at West Ham, I think, because Palace couldn't match the wages. And they were sniffing around Jordan Ibe in the final hours of the transfer deadline. So they've gone from Carrasco to Bowen to Ibe. Yeah. This is Jordan Ibe, who turned up at an under-23s game in his Bentley convertible the other week and had to park it on the muddy grass at Lymington and New Milton or somewhere because there was not enough room in the car park. So, I mean, they were scraping the barrel there. Obviously, they did bring in Tosin. I'm not sure he's going to score the number of goals that they're going to need. I think if there is one team who are going to be sucked into trouble who looks safe, it could well be Palace.
One win in 11 for them as well, and 30 points so far this season. They've got a massive game against Brighton upcoming at the end of February. Liverpool away from home, Leicester away from home, Wolves away from home, Tottenham, Manchester United and Chelsea still to play at Selhurst Park. It's grim reading for Roy Hodgson.
Well, they're close to conceding less goals than they've scored. They've scored 18 and they've conceded 23. That says it all. But as Alex said, they do kind of keep themselves in games. You never see them really go two or three behind. And, you know, they're heavily reliant then on Wilfred Zaha to do something, or Andre Ayew, Jordan Ayew, who's been very good for them. I feel sorry for Roy, because I thought he deserved to get a couple of players in the window. He deserved for Palace to throw a bit of money at it and give him
really
what he needed. Yeah, he must be, because he's the squad's limited.
David Connolly suggested that the relationship between him and the sporting director, Dougie Freeman, might not be as harmonious as we maybe first thought, and that Roy, who's been sort of very much talking up the role of Dougie Freeman, was actually doing that to put pressure upon him to deliver, and clearly he hasn't.
Because he's quite old school, Roy, isn't he? He's been in the game a long time. Obviously, he's the oldest manager in the Premier League, and I think he thinks it's the manager's job to sign players. Obviously, in Palace's case, as is with most modern clubs now, it's Dougie Freeman. And as you say, I think by highlighting that role, he's almost saying to the fans, "Look, don't blame me, blame this guy."
He's Parrish's mate, though, isn't he? He's Parrish's mate, Dougie Freeman. Basically, that's one of the reasons why he's in that role. And I think Roy Hodgson's probably thinking, well, are you capable of doing the job and getting the players in that I want? I think obviously there's been rumours about the owners wanting to kind of sell up as well. Maybe that's why the money hasn't been available to the manager. But what he's I think they'll get enough results just for the way they set up organisation-wise. And
they would have got a lot more money and may well end up still getting a lot more money if they sold Wilfred Zaha. You know him well. Lots of discussion about his future. Why has he not moved on? Do you think he wants to move on? Would you advise him to move on?
He's desperate to move on, Wilf. I think, you know, he was desperate in the summer. I think he's been desperate in the window just gone to move on. But, you know, Palace have killed him in a way because they outpriced him. They wanted too much money for him. I don't think many teams are willing to...
Did his agent outprice him, actually, by making him sign that ridiculous contract 18 months ago?
Yeah, you could look at it that way as well. If you do that, then obviously Palace can demand more money. But then on the flip side, as a player then, you're earning more money as well.
So 18 months ago, he gets this five-year contract, despite the fact there's a lot of speculation about him leaving. Surely, if you're the agent in that situation, don't you negotiate, actually, look, we'll take a new five-year contract, but only to guarantee you the money that you're going to get when you sell him on. So therefore, let's agree a price.
Yeah.
Let's put that in the contract as a buyout clause. Let's come to a sensible arrangement about it. And if it's not acceptable to you and you think that that's too high, then you don't sign the contract.
Yeah, I think that's probably where the mistake has been made between Wilf and his agent, where if you're going to sign the contract knowing that you're still desperate to leave and Palace can command a better figure with you doing that, you take the extra money, but you put something in there, a realistic kind of fee that you know a club might come in and pay. Not doing that has allowed Palace to just price him out of the market, and he hasn't got the move he wants. And I know what Wilf's like a little bit as well. If things are not right in his head mentally and stuff, he's not happy about something, then you don't tend to get him playing at 110% then either. So that's the way for me, him still being at Palace. Will he play to the levels that he's capable of if he's not happy still being there?
I don't think he's a top four player, Wilf Zaha.
But you have to look at how Palace play as well. It's difficult for Wilf to play in that Palace team as well. You have to factor that in.
Well, what's your view?
My view,
you had the casting vote, here's £60 million. Danny would buy Wilf Zaha. I wouldn't. You're the sporting director of Manchester City. Would you pay £60 million for Wilf Zaha?
Not Manchester City, but I might buy him at Chelsea.
Again.
Or Everton.
Europa League.
Really? Who's playing the Europa League this season? I remember, Chelsea did win the Europa League last year.
They did.
Will Manchester United win the Europa League this year?
Possibly.
Oh, we'll see. This game, by the way, Crystal Palace against Everton. Oh, we haven't talked about that. We should really touch on that at some point. Ighalo, happy?
Stop laughing. Again, I was doing the Deadline Day coverage. When I first heard they were in for Ighalo, I thought, are you actually having a laugh? The more I look at it with a cold light of day...
Because these things aren't private. Should I read you what you said when you thought...
Oh, this is gold. This is going to be gold.
Was coming into the team. Do you want...
Is there a lot of swearing on this?
I was going to say, you might have to bleep this bit.
So first of all, on Friday morning at 8:12, I've texted our little group, which says two words and two different messages. Josh King. The response was, from Crook, one I made up ages ago was an obvious link with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Can't believe they're actually trying to do it.
I can see it now. Carrington, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's picked up the Daily Star and thought, well, that's a good idea. I might go for Josh King.
Then, at 5:06 on deadline day, this is the quote. United are actually trying to sign Ighalo. F*** my life. Response from other Manchester United fan. Please tell me you're joking. Surely they'd be better just giving Tahith Chong minutes.
I don't agree with that.
Alex Crook. Probably won't happen due to the deadline day being so close, but this is the only one they're now pursuing. Response from other Manchester United fan. Igalo's agent. Clap, 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 clap.
So listen, they were my initial views. I think it makes Ed Woodward look a bit of a fool because he was trying to tell anyone who would listen they've got this strategic approach now to transfers. Well, clearly they haven't because they just signed the first bloke who was available. But he's taken a pay cut to play for his boyhood club or the team he followed since he was a boy. His family actually already live in Manchester, his wife and children. I didn't realise that. They already live in Manchester. If he gets
cool place to live.
If he gets the goals that take United from the Europa League into the Champions League, it's going to work out okay. If he doesn't, we can laugh, but actually it's not that much of a financial issue, is it?
Anybody that comes from China's taking a pay cut for starters. But you know what? At least your player's a striker. You'll play up front. You watch Martial and he's everywhere.
And I did also see him posing with his new Ighalo 25 Manchester United jersey, and he smiled, so that's already an upgrade on Martial.
Yeah. Honestly, Martial has been so poor, and he's had so many opportunities now to prove he can be that number 9. He's not a number 9.
No.
He's not a number 10. He's not a number 11. I don't know what he is. No, so if Ighalo comes in, I think he will be more effective in that Manchester United team than Martial.
I don't know what he's like 3 years on after, you know, kind of playing in China, but on his day, he is...
His goal record's very good.
He's a handful. He's a handful as a player. So, and someone who's going to be delighted to be there, not believe this is actually happening.
He's absolutely made up to be there.
He's, can't believe
what's happening. He thought it was made up initially, I'm sure.
He didn't think it could get any better, did he?
I went to Bournemouth last week for the Arsenal game, but I spent a bit of time chatting with some of the Bournemouth people behind the scenes, and their sole focus was winning the game against Aston Villa on Saturday, quite rightly so, and they ultimately did that. And that's back-to-back Premier League wins for the first time since September. What chance is it that they'll make it three, Danny Gabaldon?
You never know with Bournemouth, do you? They're so kind of topsy-turvy. You kind of thought maybe this was coming because it is what Bournemouth do. They are streaky. I was worrying a little bit more for them with the manner of the losses in recent weeks. You know, pressure mounting a little bit on Eddie Howe. But to be fair, you know, they've had, was it 3 home games on the bounce, is it?
In all competitions.
In all comps.
Playing in the,
obviously, the Arsenal game didn't go their way. But you know, he's got a reaction from his players. Slight change of system, I think, as well. Maybe
he changed the system actually halfway through the Bournemouth game after about 35 minutes, he tweaked it because he was getting done all over the place.
Yeah.
And he just had a little tactical switch, went to a more conventional formation, which they're used to playing. And as a result of that, got less sort of done in midfield, more joy going forward, created a few more chances. Still didn't take them, though. Mm. But obviously they did in their next game against Aston Villa. And the fact that they got through with the idea of a bit of spirit and a bit of desire. Yeah. I mean, they've done it by changing stuff up. The walkout music has changed. The music in the dressing room has changed. Anything to get an advantage. I was also told that the spirit they showed with that 10 men was akin to what they showed in their championship winning season. And that togetherness is required, isn't it?
Absolutely. I have to say, for the first 45 minutes on Saturday, they were absolutely superb. They played Villa off the park. It was the best they've played all season. Obviously, Jefferson Lerma then gets himself sent off. Maybe a bit harsh, but you know, you're not unlucky if you've been booked 60-odd times
66.
Over the last two or three seasons. So difficult to have too much sympathy for him. But as you say, then it was about digging in, backs to the wall. Simon Francis, a player I've been very critical of, was superb at both ends of the field. Preferred to Steve Cook at centre-half, which I thought was an interesting change.
He's been having a bit of a bad time, though, Steve Cook.
Yeah.
Individual mistakes.
Since Sam touted him for England.
What?
No, what happened was is that... Alex wrote an article in the paper about him playing for England. And as a result of that, I went and asked him the question. Since then, he's made error after error after error.
That should be another tattoo somewhere on your body for saying that.
Cookie for England. But you know the one player, and he's an unsung hero, who really makes them tick? Dan Gosling in midfield.
Yes.
When he plays in midfield, they are a much better team. They're more dynamic. He's a better passer of the ball than Messrs. Lerma and Billing. He puts a shift in.
He works really hard. He gets up and down very well. He does. Doesn't he?
Am I right in saying
he's the golden goose? Then is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Gosling's the golden goose.
You know what you're going to get with him, didn't he? I think you need that as a manager when you're in that
situation.
He's
always going to lay you an egg.
Players. Players that you can rely on. You know they're going to carry out your kind of orders. You know, Lerna is a good player, but. You know, if he's going to get sent off and things like that, then it doesn't help. But am I right in saying they've only scored 17 goals, Bournemouth, this
season? Over the course of the season.
Which I found astounding, really, because I think you always associate Bournemouth with high-scoring kind of games, and I think they're averaging less than one goal a game this season. Obviously, you know, goals has been a big issue for them.
25.
That's because
25,
Callum stopped scoring and Ryan Fraser has been honest.
Josh King has been
honest enough to admit
injured.
That he's pretty much down tools for the first half of the season, but he was brilliant buzzing around Fraser at the weekend. So if they can maintain that level of performance with the spirit and character thrown in, I think they've got a great chance.
And you spoke to Aaron Ramsdale?
I did. It was great, actually, because you're so close to the dressing rooms there. Dean Smith was actually conducting his post-match radio interviews outside the dressing room. And all you could hear in the background was the Bournemouth players bouncing up and down and singing what I later learned from Ramsdale was their winning song. I've had it in my head ever since. Free from desire.
Well, it's the same one they use for Will Grigg, isn't it?
Yeah,
Will
Grigg's
on fire, and everybody else is on fire as a result of that. But look, ultimately, you can tell that the spirit amongst the group seems to be improving. And I think, obviously, the fact they've got so many of their players who were injured coming back into the team is obviously going to help them. Sheffield United, they've lost 5 games at home already this season, but they don't actually lose many matches, do they? They're very good away from home. At home, they've been a bit more vulnerable. But the centre-backs are the stars of the show. And the goalie is the star of the show as well, because he's got 9 clean sheets in 24 appearances. That is pretty sensational. Manchester United's best goalie's on loan.
To be fair, that's probably the best bit of business that Chris Wilder did in the summer, getting Dean Henderson back. Obviously played a big part in getting them to the Premier League and has carried on that good form. I think the business that they've done in the window is up there with the best of any team in the Premier League as well. Sander Berge coming in is a fantastic player. They got Zivkovic in, didn't they? Attacking player, and got Restos in as well as a centre-half. So I think they're looking at it thinking, look, guys, let's qualify for Europe. We can do this. Yeah. You know, the way the league's going, teams dropping points. Let's spend a bit of cash now, improve the squad, and let's kick on and actually try and qualify for European position.
Be a difficult game for Bournemouth, but we mentioned the two goalkeepers, Ramsdale and Henderson. We talked about people who might get into the England squad for the March internationals. Obviously, Henderson and Ramsdale have got to be contenders, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think probably Henderson would be perceived to be further ahead than Ramsdale at this stage, just because, of course, he did it in the Championship last season. This is Ramsdale's first season in the Bournemouth first team, but he's been their player of the year, and he's got such enthusiasm, he's got such a wonderful character. I think that's going to play a big part for them between now and the end of the season. But it's Mrs. Wilder that I feel sorry for, actually, because his wedding anniversary, Chris Wilder,
elaborate,
is on January the 31st. So he told me at the start of the season, he said, I'll never forget Aaron Ramsdale because I sold him on my wedding anniversary to Bournemouth. And obviously most years the transfer deadline closes on January 31st, so I'd imagine it's always a depressing dinner for Mrs. Wilder.
Why did they sell him?
They needed the money at the time, and I think also Chris Wilder felt that he couldn't stand in his way. Obviously, I think they were in League One club at the time when they sold him to Bournemouth. Chance to go and join a Premier League club, and he's firmly established himself now as the number one. I was talking to him about this game.
In a brief spell last year on loan, didn't he, away at Wimbledon, is that right?
Yeah, and I've talked to him about that in the past, and he said that was the making of him. Coming up against people like Adebayo Akinfenwa and getting bashed about, and I think James Hansen was there, used to knocking about in training. He had to wash his own kit. And he said that really prepared him for life as a Premier League player. It gave him a different
perspective. Sounds like Jordan Ives should go and do for a couple of weeks.
Well, I think he might have to at the end of the season. But he said it gave him a great perspective. And I spoke also to Wally Downs for a feature I wrote about Ramsdale early in the season. And he described him as an alpha male, a throwback. an old school sort of footballer, not pampered like many Premier League players.
Not something you expect from someone who's so young.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's very confident, doesn't take himself too seriously. He turned up for the Tranmere playoff final when one of his mates was playing dressed as a Teletubby in the crowd. So he's, as I say, he's got a wonderful way with him. And I think it's great because you speak to him in interviews and he speaks from the heart. And again, for one so young, you don't expect that. There's no media training at all. It's brilliant from a journalistic point of view.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Great pod today. Appreciate it. Well, congratulations to Crook, who goes home with our special prize, which is a signed Moose T-shirt.
Knew I should let Danny win.
Game Day has two live games this weekend. There's only four. 12:30 on TalkSport this Saturday. It's Everton against Crystal Palace, followed by Brighton against Watford at 5:30. We'll be back next week with the rest of the teams who are resting up in heavenly surroundings, getting back into the groove. Meanwhile, the verdict and the record book will keep you through the weekend.
That was a Game Day Premier League preview show, a TalkSport exclusive podcast.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on TalkSport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.